content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Martha Potter from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next half hour, we'll be reading to you from Our State Magazine. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974 and underwriting this podcast for over 15 years. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. In this episode, we'll dig deeper into the theme of the July issue of Our State Magazine, which is called Summer in the Shade, featuring cool ideas to beat the heat. Our first story is called Mother Nature's Classroom. At Clemens Educational State Forest in Clayton, rangers help North Carolinians understand why trees matter and how almost every phase of their lives will be affected by the woods around them. Ranger Gracie Brindle has seen the effect of her lessons. Some of the kids haven't been in the woods, and when you show them what's out there, you can see the amazement in their eyes. And it shows a picture of her showing what humus and versus subsoil and topsoil and the rocks themselves and how they become into soil. And then on the facing page, you have a slice of a southern red oak estimated to be 220 years old. Underneath a ceiling of trees near a 30-foot fire tower in a fractured section of that 220-year-old southern red oak, way bigger than a fire truck, Kevin Pittman stands in the middle of a gravel road and waits. He expects that the school bus carrying third graders from Bryan Road Elementary in Garner will rumble toward him at any moment. When it does, Pittman will become a teacher. He'll call himself Ranger Kevin and show dozens of students no older than 9 the many practical uses of almost every forest they'll ever see. Off to the side stand Gracie Brindle and James Kimes, 2 of Pittman's colleagues. They'll become teachers too. All 3 wear the tan and green uniform of the North Carolina Forest Service. Brindle and Kimes are educational forest rangers. Pittman is a forest supervisor, their boss. Their classroom is 826 acres that straddle the Johnston and Wake County line, a former tree nursery that in 1976 became North Carolina's first educational forest. Within minutes, Pittman hears the rumble of a diesel engine. He holds out his arms like a traffic cop and motions for the school bus to pull past the fire tower that stands in the parking lot. When the door opens, students tumble out, 1, 2, 3 at a time. They line up and, with the help of their teacher and a few chaperones, get ready for an academic adventure inside their new classroom, Clemens Educational State Forest, one of 6 educational forests in North Carolina. "Hey, are there any rivers around here?" a student asks. "There's a river to the north, but you won't be going there," Pittman responds. "But you'll be going by our pond. You'll see that. Let's go ahead and get y'all started." 3 groups of third graders began meandering down the trail where they'll hear rocks talk, turn wood pulp into paper, and scoop up dragonfly newts in nets and scream, "I got something! I got something! But I'm not picking it up!" The class begins. During his 25 years at Clemens, Pittman has met students who only knew a forest through a book or a laptop. They'd never seen a real one in real life. A few had no idea what matches were. Some thought you created fire with the flip of a switch. One even asked, "So what good are trees?" Pittman educates them because he knows the good of trees. He earned a conservation and natural resources degree from NC State. Moreover, he grew up outdoors. He saw the woods behind his grandparents' house as a magical place. At his childhood home, he heard his mom tell him and his older brother more than once as they bounded out of the house, "You can't be inside you can be inside or outside, but you can't keep opening the door." Pittman stayed outside because he loved to explore. He even poked around Clemens as a student at Vance Elementary in Raleigh. He also remembers coming to the forest with his mom. They stood at the edge of a ravine and peered over, his mom holding tight to his hand. Pittman felt he had discovered the Grand Canyon. He still carries that childlike enthusiasm for Clemens. He might pick up a yellow-ringed millipede and tell students to lean in close and breathe in. He'll ask, "What do you smell?" And when they say they can't quite place it, he'll tell them what it smells like to him. The vanilla and cherry almond scent of Jergens hand lotion. Or He'll walk along any of Clemens' four trails and tell stories of the trees along the path. He knows many, like that of the trunk section of a 220-year-old southern red oak, secured by a cable with a pair of turnbuckles to keep it from splitting apart. Pittman compares it to a giant cookie. That's how he sees the forest, a place that can hold wonder and imagination. It's like opening a book, he says, of introducing students to the forest. You show them that it's more than what you see in front of you. That's exactly what Moody, Mizell, Clemens would have wanted. This forest, a few miles northwest of Clayton, is named after him. A portrait of Clemens hangs in the Ranger Station a few steps past a large terrarium holding a timber rattlesnake named Roxy. Clemens was raised on a Brunswick County farm that grew a little bit of everything, corn, cotton, potatoes, sweet potatoes, and, when he was a teen, tobacco. As the next to youngest of 11, he started working on the farm at age 4. Years later, he joined the Civilian Conservation Corps, a public relief program that employed young, unmarried men during the Great Depression. In a 1992 interview, Clemens explained, "It did a lot of boys good. I mean, anybody who wanted to do something for themselves ordinarily can do it if they try hard enough, you know?" And Clemens did try hard. He moved up the ranks, became a leader, and in 1938 began working for John Simcox Holmes, North Carolina's first state forester. Clemens took a position at a tree nursery in what became known as Clayton State Forest. After nearly four decades as a professional nurseryman with the North Carolina Department of Conservation and Development, he found out during his retirement ceremony in August 1974 that the forest he'd cared for would be named for him. He was surprised, almost shocked. "I think he was actually in tears," says his 81-year-old son, Charles, who stood a few feet away from his father during the ceremony. During his 37-year career with the Forest Service, he produced virtually all the trees in the original forest by his retirement. It was his child, and he nurtured it into adulthood. Before he retired, a newspaper article reported that Clemens had helped to contribute to the production of more than 250 million tree seedlings for reforestation on at least 300,000 acres of land in North Carolina. He told his grandchildren the most memorable moment of his life was having the state's first educational forest to bear his name. "He was a teacher himself," Charles says, "and I think he would love the idea of kids coming to learn more about the forest and what it means to all of us." 2.5 hours later, the class ends. After making paper, measuring water quality at the pond, learning along the Talking Rock Trail how a piece of graphite could be part of their next pencil, the third graders clamber back into their school bus. When asked what they liked, their answers come loud and quick. "The pond! You got to catch stuff!" "Yeah, yeah, the pond! I like the pond! I caught a round circle kind of thing that looked like a turtle. Seeing those plants, it looked really cool. They were like little umbrellas. Learning how to make paper, it actually looked like paper, and you got to squeeze the water out of the wood pulp, and that was really satisfying." Brendel and Kimes, the two educational forest rangers, understand that enthusiasm. Like Pittman, they grew up outdoors, and like Pittman, they see the benefit of what they do for the youngest generation. They also know how working in a forest hits them, especially during the summer, when the dappled sunlight fingers through the trees and bathes everything in ever-shifting shades of gold. "It's like God's artwork," Kimes says. It's hard to imagine he created something like this, and we get to live in it almost every day. "It's like a movie," Brendel adds. "The sun comes through the leaves, and when you see it, you think, wow, this is God's doing, and that brings me peace." Pittman became forest supervisor in 2016. He's long appreciated Clemens' devotion to the forest, Clemens' forest, and he feels he's a steward of this place. He's walked much of its 826 acres, and whenever he comes across a ravine from his childhood, it reminds him of what he has come to learn. Everything looks so much bigger when you're a kid. And then he remembers the safety of holding his mother's hand and the fun of letting his imagination soar. Some of the thousands of students he sees every year likely have that same sense of wonder. Meanwhile, whenever he's not Ranger Kevin or doing office work, Pittman walks through the forest looking for ways he and his rangers can nurture the seeds Clemens first planted more than 8 decades ago. Everything that we have here, Pittman says, has been built on the shoulders of others. He gives all credit to Clemens and to Mike Huffman, the previous forest supervisor. In August of 1996, Hurricane Fran toppled acres of trees in the forest. Clemens didn't see it. He died a few months before Fran hit. It would have broken his heart, Pittman says. But today, everywhere he looks and everything he sees, Pittman spots signs of rebirth, of new growth. After all, this place is a working forest. Managing it sometimes means harvesting acres of timber. It means the forest will continue to change over time, but its stewards will make sure it continues to thrive. That was Clemens' dream. Today, it's Pittman's dream, too. And there's a couple of sub-articles that I'll go into. Into the Woods. Beginning with Clemens in 1976, the North Carolina Forest Service created a series of educational forests to teach North Carolinians about the management and practical importance of trees. No wonder forest lands blanket 61% of our state. There's Holmes Educational State Forest in Hendersonville. In our educational forest, the trees talk, sort of. And Holmes' half-mile talking tree trail gives visitors a chance to hear 7 recordings about the towering residence. There's much more to see in this woodland classroom. Its forest floor is dotted with native wildflowers, and other trails invite hikers to admire wetlands, an old Forest Service helicopter, and a view from a mountain overlook. Each educational state forest, including Holmes, features a talking tree trail. After you identify my friends and me, a white oak says, you'll never look at us the same way again. And then the other sub-article. Oh, it gives you some idea of where the other parks, forests are. There's Jordan Lake Educational State Forest in Chapel Hill. This woodland retreat is located less than an hour's drive from any major city in the Triangle. Hikers can experience the wetlands or learn about wildlife like flying squirrels, songbirds, and beavers. Bring a swimsuit and some sunscreen. Jordan Lake is just a short walk away. Then there's Turnbull Creek Educational State Forest in Elizabethtown. Our state tree is the star of this Bladen County Forest. Hikers can wander among the pines, walk along Turnbull Creek, and learn how naval stores were harvested in 18th and 19th century North Carolina. Visitors can even learn from the land itself. The forest is located amid Carolina Bays, a type of oval depression in the earth that's found in our coastal plain. And that's in Elizabethtown. And there's Tuttle Educational State Forest in Lenoir. Partially open to the public as it recovers from Hurricane Helene, Tuttle Forest is tucked in the foothills of the Blue Ridge Mountains. Its short trails wind along creeks and through dappled shade from the trees overhead, perfect for exploring with young hikers on warm summer days. Points of interest include historical stops, like the one-room Lingle School from 1867, and views of Grandfather and Grandmother and Brown Mountains. Then there's the last one is Mountain State Educational State Forest in Stanley. Our newest educational forest, set to open in the near future, is located along Mountain Island Lake, the source of water for 1 in every 12 North Carolinians. Visitors to the forest, which is a short drive from Lake Norman, will learn about water quality and conservation on trails, and groups of 10 or more can schedule ranger-led classes. If you want to visit Mountain Island Lake before the park opens, stop by the lake's various access areas to see its wildlife or canoe on its waters. Our next article is entitled, Where the Wild Things Grow. On the outskirts of Raleigh, a gardener turned a lifeless farm field into a lush wonderland. Tony Avent he's standing here in this photo beside a radiant red rhododendron while, he's standing, it's a beautiful, actually beautiful, it's almost a coral pink. It's very, very bright though. And in the background, there's another, brightly colored plant, around there. And he's also pulled some, some weeds, that he's doing some weeding. And on the facing page, there's a green cascade tree, and two folks are sitting at a picnic table. And around there's some ferns, and this green cascade tree has a rather gnarled, winding trunk, and so are its limbs and such. Very interesting. When most of us plant our gardens, we choose the plants we want. Tony Avent has come up on all of us, has one up on all of us. He can create the plants he wants. Avent nurtures and breeds more than 28,000 types of flora at his Plant Delights Nursery in Juniper Level Botanic Garden, a pocket of land on Raleigh's southern edge. Having bred and collected plants since he was 5 years old, he's amassed one of the largest plant collections on the planet. He's plucked strange and astonishing species from all over the state and world and brought them to his nursery, where life grows extraordinary. "I always wanted to be a gardener," he says, "just a crazy plant gardener." Most of the botanical garden celebrates the riot of life that can grow in the shade of old oaks with branches swooping low, gathering the light before it hits the ground. On hot days, it can feel 20 degrees cooler wandering these shadowed paths. You experience the unexpected revelation of beings that thrive away from the sun. Sometimes, when we let in a little darkness, the world opens up to greet us in more interesting ways. Avent grew up paying attention to life green and growing. He wandered his neighborhood in Raleigh, marveling over the weeds and noting differences in the dirt. Before he started grammar school, he made terrariums and soil scenes to sell to neighbors and his parents' friends. "I knew where every color of soil was," Avent says. He gathered the oranges, yellows, blacks, and grays of Raleigh's earth. "I'd sift them and make really cool scenes to sell." He collected and sold African violets as well. People would be knocking on the doors during dinner. "I would like to buy some plants." So I'd get up from the dinner table and walk them through the greenhouse and sell them plants, Avent says. From home to the Raleigh flea market, from the Raleigh flea market to the little house he shared with his late wife Michelle, on Dixie Trail near NC State's campus, Avent gathered, grew, and sold plants. At the Dixie Trail House, he and Michelle set up a visitor registry and let people tour their yard. He sold plants out of their driveway on the weekends. Then, almost 40 years ago, the Avents bought a 2-acre tobacco field and farmhouse. They had just cut the crops. The tobacco stubble was still there. There was nuts edge and wiregrass. He says, "I don't know if you've dealt with tobacco soil, but it's dead." To create a new life in a dead land, you start from the ground up. At the time, Avent was working at the North Carolina State Fairgrounds, where he set up a free compost pile for Raleighites. "Every day at lunch, I'd load up my pickup with mulch, and every night I'd bring it home and pile it up," he said. It just built up over a period of years. "In those years, we scared off all the neighbors," he jokes, which allowed him to amass 28 acres to build his nursery and botanical garden. Dwight Holland, curator of design at the North Carolina Zoo, came and built a waterfall aimed at the Avent's bedroom window to block the sound of passing traffic. The Avents removed the house next door and smashed its foundation to build a 300-foot crevice garden where succulents now peek out between cracks. Today, Avent's gardens look more like an exotic sanctuary than a tobacco field. Twice a season, Avent opens Plant Delights and Juniper Level to the public. His cats, Jasper and Kit Kat, twine their tails through the aquatic garden and hop onto a bridge to greet guests. Near the bridge, carnivorous pitcher plants open their deadly, quiet maws to the sky. They capture their own seeds in pans hung beneath their petals like balance scales. As visitors wander the garden's 8 acres, they can feel their footsteps crunch on rocks, shush on mulch, pad on earth, and crumble on gravel. They may smell the chocolate flowers, which look like black-eyed Susans and have the aroma of milk chocolate that Avent harvested in Texas. They might find Himalayan lilies with curled tendrils searching for purchase. They can see one of the property's original trees, which bends and twists with the gardens built around it. they can discover succulents ruffled like Elizabethan collars, purple jack-in-the-pulpits from China, and living stones from the African desert. Come July, visitors may see one of Avent's agaves flowering. Agaves have thick slabs of leaves that block the sun from the ground below. When they bloom, they erect a 15 to 30-foot stalk that shoots to the sky, releasing cataracts of yellow blossoms, heavy with nectar at the top. Avent's crew climbs a narrow ladder to pollinate the flowers, waving away the hundreds of bees that lift off syrup dripping from their insectile faces. My workers are like King Kong up there, swatting airplanes, he says, and the bees, my gosh, they're thrilled beyond belief. Those who can't make it to the garden during open days can order plants from one of Avent's famous, and thanks to their creative illustrations, sometimes infamous, catalogs that arrive at doorsteps around the world. Avent has no children. He has given his garden to NC State to consider his conservation work and breeding programs, like the 30-year hosta program that's wrapping up, and to keep safe the life he's gathered and invented. Some agave blossoms bloom once in their long lives, and then they die. In the wild, it might take 100 years. Under Avent's care, it can take 15. Plants require forbearance, and gardens require foresight. This world was made to grow and fall and to grow again. Avent has watched the cycle since he was 5 years old. He knows what to expect. He knows how to flourish. Oh my gosh, he says as he stands in his verdant old tobacco field with its waterfalls and valleys. It is wonderful. Annual memberships to Juniper Level Botanic Gardens are available for purchase. Members have access to classes, garden tours, plant discounts, and free entries to other gardens across the United States. For more information, visit their website at jlbg.org. jlbg.org. That's Juniper Level Botanical Gardens is what that stands for. And they have a picture of the agave plant that is blooming. And it is amazing. I know of several in the area that are blooming. And then there's a beautiful picture of a purple iris on a page. And there's a picture of one of the kitty cats. I don't know which one it is. Looking up and standing on a rock, greeting visitors. And there's a yucca, a picture of a yucca that's blooming, and let's see, oh, that's cat is Jasper, and there's some peonies, and then there's a picture of a waterfall with two people about to go under it. It falls into a little pond beneath. Pretty fascinating, actually. And since we've just been talking about plants, let's go to the article. It says, Shades of Green. Not every plant loves the sun. These perennials, which boast a variety of textures, patterns, and colors, thrive even in the shadiest gardens and woodlands across our state. Excuse me. Carolina rhododendron. Look for this evergreen shrub the next time you're hiking in Pisgah National Forest. This native species can be found in wooded areas throughout our mountains year-round, but is especially eye-catching in the late spring. Its bright pink or white blooms are favorite of hummingbirds and Andrena cornelii bees. And these are all drawn. These are not photographs of them. They're all drawings of these plants. And so it's showing a picture of a pink rhododendron. Solomon's seal. The white flowers and dark blue fruit of this wildflower, which pops up in forests from mountains to coast, is the picture of elegance with an arching stem and full alternating leaves with hanging bell-shaped flowers. Though its berries are poisonous, the plant's shoots can be steamed or boiled and eaten. And its flowers even taste good. So I see that they have a picture of the fruit, which actually looks like blueberries, so would be good not to be mixing those up. And the little bells are very cute. They're hanging down and they are white and they're elongated. Like they almost look like champagne flutes upside down with little green ruffled edges. And we've got the Eastern Red Columbine. The nectar of this striking flower is beloved by hummingbirds, butterflies, and bumblebees. Although it grows across most of the state, it prefers the woods of the mountains and foothills. Native American men reportedly crushed the seeds of these bell-like blooms and rubbed them on their hands as a love charm. And again, this has an interesting, the flower, the stem goes into the flower, and then there's these little parts of the flower that extend back upward away from where the stem meets the actual flower, and like almost like a, if you can imagine like a tent that has little feet on it that would expand if you were to open it up. I don't know if that's a very good description, but sorry about that. But they're a pink color showing here with some yellow accents. There's hobblebush. The next time you hit the Appalachian Trail, watch out for the arching, rooted branches of this shrub, named for its ability to trip unsuspecting walkers. The hobblebush makes up for the stumbling with its usefulness. Its fruit is a food source for birds and mammals, and the Algonquin and Iroquois people are said to have used its leaves and roots for medicinal purposes. And they're white blooms, and then there's the fruit looks like it's red, and then there are also some that are maybe they're super ripe and they're turning purple or dark blue. The partridge berry. If you're lucky, you might see the fuzzy tubular flowers of this creeping vine in late spring or early summer. But throughout the year, its rounded leaves carpet small woodland areas across the state, and its bright red fruits feed a variety of small mammals, songbirds, grouse, turkey, and quail. And it's a little trumpet-looking, what they're calling tubular, but they're trumpet-looking with four petals. The blooms, and then the red fruit. Cinnamon fern. Named for the rusty color of its fertile fronds, this fern loves moist, boggy soil and is most frequently found along streams or in shady ridges. Its wide stretching branches are an ideal location for ground nesting birds like the Kentucky warbler, and songbirds use the fuzz on its stem to line their nests. Next is the cast iron plant. This leafy evergreen, which can be speckled or striped, solid, is hard to kill. Named for its ability to survive neglect, this hardy plant can thrive anywhere as long as it's cool and dark, including in dense understories where it can ride out the winter, a rare exception among common indoor plants. Get acquainted with them at Sarah P. Duke Gardens in Durham or at the J.C. Ralston Arboretum in Raleigh. And the last one is the foam flower. These delicate wildflowers resemble tiny starbursts. When they're clustered together, they create constellations on forest floors. You can find them mainly in the Piedmont, where they love damp, rich soil and sloping ground. Along with attracting pollinators, their cream or pink petals also shelter small wildlife like lizards and frogs. Interesting. Well, that sound indicates that we've run out of time for today's episode of Our State Magazine. I hope you enjoyed it and that you'll be sure to listen next time. I'm Martha Potter, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's reading of Our State Magazine is underwritten by Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. And this broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any questions or comments, please give us a call at 919-832-5138. So long till next time.